You mean we have to talk about health for the next hour? Okay, I'm in. You got me. Let's do it. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257. If you haven't heard this program before, it is called Health Essentials, and obviously I would prefer to talk about things that actually repair the body, whether it's a cell or a gland or a tissue. If you don't focus on repairing the body, then what have you got? Well, you can take drugs, and drugs may very effectively quell your symptoms for a brief moment, but they don't do anything to fix the root cause of the problem. I think I started to cover this topic last week. I'm not sure I got through it looking at my notes. I'm positive I didn't get through it. But anyway, it's not going to hurt to cover it one more time. But I was listening to what a man said about carrots this week, and I want to at least give you some food for thought here. You remember the quote from Hippocrates, the very, very famous Greek physician? Oh, my goodness. Back in the day, he was the quintessential paragon of excellence when it comes to being a physician. But he was very famous for a quote. And he says, "Let thy food be thy medicine, and let thy medicine be thy food." And you could take a step back from that and say, oh, I wonder if he's right. Well, there's one thing that you and I cannot get away from as long as we're living on this earth. You are going to have something to eat. And so what you choose to put in your mouth can make all the difference. It can be a game changer. It's really hard for me not to recommend living whole foods. They're real. You know how in the book of Genesis chapter 1 it says every plant produces seed after its own kind? You don't hear seeds talked about just a whole lot anymore. I mean, occasionally, maybe on a Sunday night, occasionally, but still, if a carrot produces seeds and the seeds fall to the ground, well, what have you got? You've got the potential for it to spring forth life. So that would be a whole lot different than eating a carrot cake. You know where I'm going with this. Anyway, there was one particular study on carrots. And what they did was they examined 1,300 elderly persons that lived in the state of Massachusetts. And they had two criteria. You had to either eat a serving of carrots or squash. I don't know if that makes people happy that are listening, or maybe some people are repulsed by that. I am not, because I like those. I've always liked squash. You know, it's when you're raised on squash, it's just normal table fare, right? So they had at least one serving of carrots and or squash each day. And what they found was, and you might want to pay attention to this, there was a 60% reduction in their risk of heart attacks compared to those who ate less than one serving of these carotenoid-rich foods per day. So just digest on that for a little bit. Okay, here's the rest of it. In another study, they show that the high carotene intake from carrots is linked with a 20% decrease in postmenopausal breast cancer. Anything that tilts the balance in your favor toward radiant health and longevity, I'm for. And they showed, get this, there was up to a 50% decrease in the risk of cancers of the bladder, the cervix, the prostate. That would be if you're a man. The cervix would be if you're a woman. But they also showed the colon, the larynx, and the esophagus, which you don't really hear a lot about larynx or voice box cancer, but I think I've seen more reports where it might be more extensive now than or widespread than what it used to be. Now, this one right here from a different study, it showed that if you had as little as one carrot per day, that could conceivably cut the rate of lung cancer in half. Besides the fact that carrots have been shown to be really good for your eyes. And there's actually one aspect of vision that's been shown to really benefit. I mean, I'm not an eye doctor, but I know eye doctors. I know, I'm just teasing about that. No, I do know eye doctors, but I just think that's funny that historically, before science came along and did studies on this, people knew if you wanted to have good eyesight, you may want to eat some carrots. And so in one study that I came across, they showed that high beta-carotene, or these carotenoid foods like carrots, it provides tremendous protection against the development of what's called macular degeneration, which, if there's a condition of your eyes you do not want, that would be it. They also showed that if you had one carrot a day, tremendous protective benefits against developing cataracts, which, if you said, okay, what about cataracts and what about macular degeneration? Well, it's going to be hard to read and to drive and to see. And I would say one way to measure health is, whatever your age is, can you do everything throughout the day that you need to do? Can you drive to the store and can you get groceries? And do you have enough strength to bend over into the shopping cart and lift the bag of groceries or the thin-walled plastic sacks that we have now and put them in the trunk of your car? Can you carry them inside? Do you have enough strength if you started to trip that you could actually bring your leg and foot forward fast enough with those fast twitch muscle fibers so you could actually catch yourself and not fall to the ground or to the concrete? I don't know anyone that's magically better off by taking a fall. Okay. One more tidbit of information here. I found this study from 1979. Now, I'm kind of getting off carrots and squash, but I found this study because this is a topic, I mean, it's going to be every day for me. Someone is going to make a point about cholesterol. For example, a woman was talking about how her cholesterol was near 180, and then when it was tested again, it was 260. Well, one of the issues is she's had this chronic case of bronchitis and a lung infection. And so if you were to Google or look up studies, does cholesterol levels increase greatly when you have an infection? Oh, my word, yes. If you look at the research and the medical studies on cholesterol, which the reason I'm bringing this up, I am not trying to say that cholesterol is bad. You've got to have it. Half of the dry weight of your brain is cholesterol. Every wrapper, the myelin sheath that wraps around each nerve, is made of cholesterol. Your ability to move and to breathe and to walk, is you got to have cholesterol to do all those things. So cholesterol is not necessarily bad. I mean, you've heard me say before that one of the highest foods in cholesterol is mother's breast milk. But then again, that baby is learning the moment it comes out of the womb. It's like cramming for life, not for a college examination, but it's learning so rapidly. Sometimes we don't think about how fast a baby learns, but oh boy, can they learn rapidly. And for them, learning is fun if they have a good home, right? Okay, well, in this study, well, you know what the point I was getting to is, most people have this tremendous fear of cholesterol as if it's the enemy. The only way that cholesterol can ever present a problem is if it becomes oxidized. Now, I realize that's an oversimplification. So if you're really concerned about your cholesterol, there's probably a very simple test that you can request that for your doctor to do. One of them is oxidized cholesterol. If I told you that where the top coat and the coat of paint has been scraped off your car or your pickup truck, you know, from a rock on the highway, and there was bare sheet metal, well, you wouldn't be shocked if maybe that was rusted a little bit. Well, rusting of metal, that's oxidation. Does that make sense? Or if you had, the paint on a bumper look kind of a chalky, that's oxidation right there. So one of the most accurate tests to try to determine if your cholesterol is actually going to be problematic for you is oxidized cholesterol. And that's something that your doctor can order if they want to. Now, I'm not saying it fits the narrative that's presented, but still, it's legitimate. And maybe the best example that I have of this, you may have heard me tell that when they try to ship food overseas to our troops, like in Afghanistan or Iraq, They will take eggs, and instead of sending eggs over there, they will try to powder them or convert them into a powdered form. I mean, you've heard of powdered eggs, haven't you? Have you ever been to like a motel where they have a continental breakfast and you look at the scrambled eggs that you have access to and you ask yourself, are those actually real eggs? Because they don't look like they are. They could have been reconstituted from powdered eggs. Anyway, my point is, they take this hose that leads to this heated metal gun, not a gun that goes bang bang, but a gun that's heated like a spray gun if you're going to spray paint, you know, on the side of a car. But they run liquefied eggs through this heated gun that's heated to 700 degrees Fahrenheit. And you know as well as I do that eggs are a source of cholesterol. That's one of the reasons why when you use low heat on your cast iron griddle or on your stainless steel pan or your wok or whatever it may be that you cook your eggs in, if you use a lower heat, you tend to preserve more of the life force or the nutrients. It tends to have greater benefit as opposed to heating it so hot that you burn everything in sight. That's not good. But when they run those liquid eggs through this heated gun, it instantly burns the water out of it at 700 degrees Fahrenheit. It's like instantly water goes from the liquid state to the gassy evaporative state that just poof, the water's gone. It comes out powder. Well, they do that because it weighs a lot less and they can ship a lot more over there. The problem is at 700 degrees Fahrenheit, that literally causes the cholesterol that's found in the good wholesome eggs to oxidize. And they have shown over and over again in studies that if a person consumes oxidized cholesterol from either powdered milk or powdered eggs, that you're asking for trouble because it wants to kind of glue itself to the lining of the arteries. I did not say that I fully understand every aspect of it. And that's one of the reasons why if you use whey protein powder, like if you wanted to make a smoothie and you say, you know what, I think I need a little bit of protein, so I'm going to get some whey, that's spelled W-H-E-Y. If it doesn't say on the label, I mean, it should say low temperature. It might even say the phrase ion exchange. So you look on the label for the extraction method. If it says low temperature, ion exchange, that tells you right there that they've tried to use a very low temperature, most likely below 125 degrees, to help it to get the whey from the milk. If it doesn't say that, I just kind of assume that it comes from very, very high heat, and high heat oxidizes cholesterol, and you're not better off. None of you are by consuming oxidized cholesterol. I mean, I realize if we were starving, if we were in prison, and this is all we had, I get it. I would still say, Lord, thank you for this food. You have been so generous and kind to us. We appreciate something to eat. I would eat it too. But if you have a choice, you don't have any business eating powdered eggs or anything that's powdered from milk because that's oxidized cholesterol. Going back to the study, back in 1979, they did this very, very interesting study in India. And if I'm not mistaken, it's called the Jain community. So they had three populations of vegans or vegetarians. And the only thing different between these three groups they measured was going to be the amount of garlic and onions they ate each week. And so here, I'm getting back to what I was beginning with a while ago. The idea of cholesterol, because that really disturbs a lot of people. If they do a blood test and their cholesterol is above 200, they just literally cannot take that. It's too much. I don't know if you've heard me say before, but one of the most accurate predictors from a blood test of all time, if your triglycerides, which I realize that's not the same as cholesterol, but usually it's tested all at the same time. So if a doctor says, let's measure your cholesterol, 99% of the time, the triglyceride number is right there also. You know, if we break down the word triglyceride, we get tri, which means three, and the glyceride refers to three sugar molecules. You take three molecules of sugar or glycerol and you convert it into fat. The only stored form of fat in the body really is triglycerides. So there's that. So what they did was they looked at these vegetarians in India, and they said, okay, we just want to see what the average cholesterol is in people that don't eat onions and garlics. I mean, the consumption is zero, as in none. They don't eat garlic and they don't eat onions. And so when they measured their average cholesterol, it was 208 milligrams per deciliter. So what if yours was 208? Just think about that for a second. And then they measured what's called triglycerides. Now, as a general rule, when the triglycerides are somewhere between 50 and probably 80, those are considered very excellent numbers. It is very, very hard to lose weight when your triglycerides are above 80. I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying the most one of the most accurate lab tests of all time to predict if a person's about to have a stroke or going to have a stroke would be triglycerides at 200 or above. I've seen triglycerides at 1,000 before, and it just boggles the mind. I ask myself, how can that much fat fit in the arteries? That's impossible. But I have seen it. I've seen a whole bunch in the 400 to 600 range. It just boggles my mind how a person can be so resilient when their body or their arteries are under so much stress like that. So when they looked at this initial group of vegetarians, their total cholesterol was 208, and their triglycerides were 109. We might actually look at that and say, is that a problem? Well, I don't know, but possibly. I'm probably more concerned about the triglycerides, because the more fat that you pack in your arteries, that's when they tend to bulge outward. It's like a water hose. It's turned on at the faucet, but the end of it's turned off, like with a spray nozzle, and guess what happens on a warm summer day? It looks like a boa constrictor sunning in the sun. It becomes fat. So even if you turn the water off, you have all this horrible back pressure. So that's the idea of triglycerides. Anyway, so this first group, they had no onions, no garlic. Total cholesterol was 208. Triglycerides was 109. Are you with me? Then they looked at the second group, and the way that they identified the second group is just one way. They said if you consume somewhere between 10 grams, maybe upwards to 200 grams, they let them have quite the variance in there of onions and garlic. What's your total cholesterol going to be? And what are your triglycerides going to be? So the ones that didn't have any onions and garlic, their total cholesterol was 208 and their triglycerides were 109. Those that had somewhere between 10 and 200 grams of onions and garlic a week, which is really not a lot, their total cholesterol was different. Now, would you guess it would go higher than 208 or lower? Well, lo and behold, it averaged 172. So if you want to say that was 36 points lower, that's pretty impressive, isn't it? Okay. So total cholesterol, when you had a little bit of onions and garlic every week, was 172. Guess what the triglycerides were? They went from 109 down to 75. Well, when I see numbers like that, I think, okay, there is a benefit to these people's health. Now, one last group. They found a group of individuals that averaged somewhere between 50 upwards to 600 grams of garlic and onions a week. Guess what their total cholesterol was? 159. So 208 on the cholesterol for those that don't have onions and garlic at all. Those that have a little bit, it's 172, but those that have more, 159. And those that had the most onions throughout the week, their triglyceride levels were at 52. Isn't that interesting? Now, I'm going to tell you, there's a different way of looking at this. And I know it's an oversimplification, but that's just the probably the best way to look at this. If the bulk of what you're putting into your mouth comes from the real vegetable kingdom, like, hey, we're going to have a fair amount of onions and garlic, there's probably not room for other stuff. There's another way of saying this. If you eat a bunch of junk food, there's probably not going to be any way that you have any desire to consume vegetables at all. It's just the way it is. What would happen to a child if they just had processed foods like Lucky Charms and Fruit Loops and chocolate-coated sugar cocoa bombs. I just made that last one up, but, you know, it might as well be called something like that. That stuff is so addictive. The food industry knows exactly what the chemicals, monosodium glutamate, and high fructose syrup, corn syrup, do to a kid. They make them totally addicted to it, and their taste buds are hooked. So what would you guess they want to eat if they have that stuff every day? That's all they want to eat. But if you put, like, eggs in front of them, they go, ooh, gross. What if you give them, of course, you know, in all fairness, I think when I was 6 or 7, I probably wasn't too keen on onions, but boy, do I love them now. Oh, man, we live in a good part of the world where you can grow onions, right? The sandy soil. You know, that's what I need to look for. They're just now putting out all the starter onion batches. If you go to Atwoods or Walmart or the nursery or probably Lowe's or Home Depot, there's probably plenty of people that offer them. But, yeah, thank the good Lord for growers. People that give us starter vegetables, that's great. If you would like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. The whole reason I told you about the garlic and onions is for one reason, because I want you to figure out that the more of that stuff that you eat, the better your cholesterol and triglycerides are going to be. And as a general rule, when your triglycerides are up around 200, things don't bode too well for you. You're asking for something to break down. I do not want you to have a transient ischemic attack. I don't want you to have a stroke. I don't want there to be so much stress on your arteries that your blood pressure goes through the roof high. That is not good. Let's try to get at the core of this. The other thing that I should have talked about is onions and garlic. They are such a tremendous source of one element that's found in nature called sulfur. And I know that's probably what gives them such a strong, you know, odor or aroma. I'm sure you have never cut onions before where you had a tear form in your eye. I want you to remember, though, that when they've looked at population studies here in the U.S., usually where the soil is very, very deficient in sulfur, you know, the element I was just referring to, sulfur, they have some of the highest rates of cancer. They've got some of the highest levels of obesity and arthritis and diabetes. And, of course, the one that we can't remove from that would be heart disease. Every shape, form, and fashion of it. If you say, well, is heart disease high blood pressure or clogged arteries in the heart that require stents or a cardiac bypass? Is that heart attacks? Yes, it's all the above. That would be heart disease. And so quite often, here's what you've got. When you have soil that's heavily sprayed with chemicals, I know you've heard of that stuff called glyphosate. If you want to call it Roundup, I think glyphosate is probably the bulk of it. Maybe it's got water, maybe water's the most, but anyway, water is not the toxic substance that I'm concerned about. It would be the glyphosate. So if you want to say Roundup, that is fine by me. I'm not offended by that. Well, you certainly wouldn't go to the store and buy a gallon of it and drink it today now, would you? No. But the stuff is liquid death. And it has one of the strongest anti-sulfur. I know the way I'm saying this is not going to make logical sense, but what I'm trying to suggest is when people live a long time and they're very, very healthy, usually it's common that they have a little bit more sulfur than everybody else in the world in their bodies. And so where do you get sulfur from? If we went to the island of Okinawa, Japan, where essentially, I guess you'd say that's like a volcanic island, just a big volcanic island. There's probably like volcanoes everywhere. Since I'm not around volcanoes here in East Texas, I probably don't think of that a whole lot. But suffice it to say, there's a type of rock that comes from down deep in the earth called basalt rock. And this basalt rock is one of the richest sources of sulfur of all time. So when a volcanic activity and it spews forth basalt rock, well, guess what? That explosion just spews forth sulfur, 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 sulfur. And when it falls from the heavens down to the earth, guess what you have? The volcano has fertilized the topsoil with sulfur. And so when either fruit or vegetables or plants grow in soil that's rich in sulfur, guess what the plants have? They uptake in the root system. They will soak up and drink up the sulfur, which makes it very, very healthy for longevity. And so if you asked me, if you said, Dr. Morgan, which country in the world or which place in the world is known for their tremendous longevity and having significantly fewer health problems compared to maybe people where they have soils that are low in sulfur? So if you need an example, Mississippi is very low in sulfur. Okinawa, Japan, that's probably what I'm thinking of right now, very high in sulfur. And so to me this is very intriguing. When I look at the studies on which region of our country has some of the highest levels of heart disease, diabetes, obesity, arthritis, cancer, well, it's the state of Mississippi. I think literally they have more open heart procedures and stents and men and women on blood pressure medication there than probably anywhere else in the U.S. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe the numbers have changed over the last 7 years, because I think the numbers I'm looking at were like from 2014, 2013, somewhere around there. I can always go back and double check and see if I can find anything new. But if we look at the state of Oregon, where they have some of the highest sulfur levels, Oregon has the leanest, skinniest teenagers in the U.S. And I'm not trying to make fun of anybody here. We're just calling it for what it is. So, but what Oregon has, it's had volcanoes that have blown in the past. And so basalt rock has come deep from the bowels of the earth to spew forth over the land. Okay, that didn't sound good. But I didn't say the earth is vomiting. I never said that. But when the volcanic eruption takes place, that's how sulfur, that's the delivery system for sulfur to the earth. And so when you look at Oregon, they have the lowest diabetes, the lowest heart disease. They absolutely have the lowest cancer rates of any state in the U.S. So there you have it. So onions and garlic are rich in sulfur. That's what we've learned today. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Morgan. I've been wanting to ask you something. You're talking about, so since you're talking about sulfur, my mother and son are allergic to sulfa, and also I have a daughter-in-law that's allergic to iodine. What, can you just enlighten me on that?
Sure. If you and I got on the internet right now and I said, I'm going to do a literature search just on iodine, we would find out real quick there's over 150 different forms. But what I'm going to present to you is there's really only one form that's found in nature. So, for example, if you and I were to go to a clean part of the ocean, I don't know where that would be. I'm going to say off the coast of Argentina. But anyway, so if we go there, obviously you're going to find iodine that's in the kelp and in the shrimp and the lobster and the fish. So if you eat flounder, that's going to have some iodine, but it's going to be a natural source of iodine. It's iodine that's been chemically treated that tends to have the toxic side effects and the allergic reactions to it. So, okay. And this is just one example. If a doctor says, you know what, I think you've got a problem with a disc in your vertebrae, I think it's bulging, but we're going to do an MRI, but we're going to use iodine as a radioactive substance or a dye to inject in your spinal cord so we can better image it. Well, what happens if the person has an adverse reaction, like, dude, I had a rash all over my body for 3 weeks. I couldn't breathe. My lips swelled up the size of two, eggplants. That's not good. My ears were itching. I thought my eyeballs were going to explode. That would be allergic reaction to that iodine. But can your daughter eat flounder?
She refuses to eat any fish.
Okay.
I haven't really talked to her about that. Well, I just figured that was why.
Well, and that may be. But there are allergies that are called crustaceans. So And those are legitimate, but some people react to the crustacean part, not so much the iodine. But that's just one idea. But iodine, okay. My point is, it's essential for life. As a woman, her breast tissue has a very high demand for iodine. And so
breastfeeds, yes.
Yeah. And so does she avoid stuff like kelp?
I don't know. I'll have to ask her about stuff like that.
I'm kind of curious about if she consumes salt of some kind that has added iodine to it. I'm just trying to think it through.
Okay. You're going real holistic.
Well, yeah, and my point is you've got to have iodine for life. I didn't say you have to have a lot of it, but the largest gland in her body right now that manufactures hormones for her is called her thyroid. And the last time I checked, the reason why they call it T3 is because it has 3 molecules of iodine surrounding 1 molecule of the amino acid tyrosine, and T4 is T4 because it has 4 molecules of iodine. But you've got to have that for just hormonal balance. Back in 1927, in the state of Michigan, they did a survey, and they estimated in certain parts of the state, easily 50%, which I'm thinking could be close to half. 50%. Is that correct? 50% of the population had a goiter. And what will happen is, if a person becomes very low in iodine, the thyroid, by its very nature, tries to enlarge so it can scavenge more iodine from the bloodstream.
Okay.
What I was going to say about the sulfur is this right here. I've had, you know, this didn't happen to me back in the 80s when I first started doing this, in the 90s. Which I don't want you to think about that too long, because if you start thinking about 80s and 90s, you're going to think that, you know, I'm old or something, and we know that that's not even remotely correct. I'm extremely young.
Well, I was a teenager in the 70s, let's say.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Well, I was too. Anyway, but my point that I was getting to, now that we have modern cell phones, I think I've had more people send me pictures of themselves to say, would you take a look at this, Dr. Morgan? You know what it is? It's almost after they've taken a sulfur drug, as in a sulfur-based antibiotic.
Mm-hmm.
Those are probably the worst reactions that I ever see to a drug, is an antibiotic that's based on sulfur.
Oh.
Which, that's what they used before penicillin came along. So if a doctor tells a young lady, ma'am, I think you have a bladder or a UTI, I'm going to put you on Macrobid, or I'm going to give you a sulfa drug, man, that's one of the scariest things I've ever seen, because, you know, the last woman that sent me a picture of her face, I thought, who's this a picture of? I don't even recognize the person. Literally, the face was swollen shut like she had been beaten. And she was completely unrecognizable, but it was just one thing. It was just a very severe allergic reaction to the sulfa drug.
Okay.
So, but these are all man-made sources of sulfur. The sulfur that you would get when you eat an egg over easy, or if you have sautéed onions, or if you eat broccoli or cabbage or kale or radishes, that's all good sulfur right there.
Okay.
Do these people have any issues with eating cauliflower or broccoli?
No. She loves all kinds of vegetables. Stuff, but she's had to go holistic. Forget the name of the disease she has.
Is it Gilbert's?
No, it's something in her colon.
Celiac?
No, it's... Sorry, I can't remember at all.
No, but this is good, though. Even though we don't know the name of the condition that she's dealing with, she said, okay, what's my options here? I'm going to give up processed, refined junk food full of chemicals and Roundup and everything else, and I'm going to try to eat clean, whole foods that God himself has made for us.
Yes.
I think that's great. Has she improved since she's done that?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Tell her I'm really proud of her.
Okay. Thanks.
You know what? Have you ever heard the phrase, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree?
Yes.
I'm not sure why I'm bringing that up, but anyway.
Yes, I hope her children do continue this. Yes.
Well, she's yours, though, isn't she?
Well, she's my daughter-in-law, but yes.
Well, she is now. But
she has been since she was in first grade. So,
well, you know, for all you know, your influence has been a mighty influence upon her. So that's great.
Yeah, her my daughter and her were best friends since first grade, and then now they're sister-in-laws.
So. I bet they love every bit of it, don't they?
Yeah, yeah, they do.
Are they like best friends also?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Still, since first grade. I mean,
oh, what a beautiful story.
Yeah.
So you don't really, I don't know that they're going to have problems if they get sulfur from natural sources, so.
Okay.
I mean, sulfur's part of life. You can't live without sulfur.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Do you know what the original form of cholesterol that they studied when they first identified it from human blood? It was called cholesterol sulfate. And they noticed that when cholesterol sulfate was down to zero or they couldn't find it, that's where you see very, very severe autism in children. But at the other end of the spectrum, you would see very severe versions of Alzheimer's or dementia in adults. And I realize that narrative doesn't work because they're going, wait a second, we don't see any cholesterol sulfate. So when cholesterol sulfate is in a good range, usually you have great potential for your mind to work very, very well. And I know this is a complicated topic, but sulfur is... There's a reason why people on the island of Okinawa that eat food that grows in that sulfur-rich soil, there's a reason why they live a long time and they don't have dementia. But I'm thinking part of that equation has got to be sulfur.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You really enlightened
me. Thanks for your phone call. You're welcome. I hope you have a great day, ma'am.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. Okay, if you'd like to join me on the radio, there's a phone line officially open. It's 903-586-5257. That's 903-586-5257. Yeah, if anybody ever reacts to sulfur, it's going to be like the chemically adulterated processed form that, we've had something to do with. It's not the natural form. I don't know if that makes sense, but... Trust me, I've seen wicked bad reactions. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Great, great. Hey, I heard you mention a moment ago about the thyroid, and I've been told I have an underactive thyroid, and I was wondering if there's anything I can do to increase that versus... taking T3.
Well, if I ask you a question, do you have any type of gut instinct? It's what is behind all this?
No, I don't. Just that it was low.
Well, let me just kind of flesh it out then. There are so many studies that show that one of the main regulatory systems over a man's thyroid is a glandular system called the adrenal gland. Meaning, if your body is too stressed for too long, that's what the net effect is. Too much cortisol over a long period of time, it has this natural ability to suppress a man's thyroid. And so if stress were the culprit, then we would deal with that. The other thing that can be easily looked at, there is a female hormone called estrogen. I know you're all men, but I'm just trying to say, in our modern times, there's so many synthetic forms or chemical forms of estrogen that are in plastics and in food, stuff like that. Probably a lot of the antibiotics that are in chicken act like estrogen. So in a man, if he starts to pick up too much synthetic estrogens from the food supply, he'll actually start to develop what's called gynecomastia. That means instead of having a nice athletic chest, it tends to look more like a woman's. I was trying to say that kind of delicately. You know what I mean, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
The other thing that you would look at is on your skin. If you tend to have a huge accumulation of these little bitty red spots on your skin, sometimes they're called strawberry or cherry hemangiomas, they're red spots, that can give me a clue that you're having either a buildup of what's called too much estrogen. there is an enzyme called the alpha 5 reductase. When that increases, you tend to get more estrogen. And I guess what I'm saying is, if a man comes in contact with too much estrogen from his food supply or water supply, then that's going to have a negative effect on the thyroid. And so the play is, what can I do to kind of remove that stuff from my diet? So that's something you can look at right there. The other thing that I really, really think of a lot when it comes to modern times, there's an element in nature called fluorine or fluoride. A lot of times, if you look at the clothing of people that work around hot areas, and I guess this could be firemen, it could probably be police officers, oil field workers, but they have this fire retardant chemical, but it's based on fluoride. So in the real world, the way that they would put that in contact with us is if you had microwave popcorn. Because in microwave popcorn, you have this thin layer of fluoride / Teflon. Maybe it's to keep from catching the paper bag on fire when it heats up and that popcorn starts popping. But nonstick cookware is probably the biggest source that I know of. So if you had like a frying pan or a skillet that had this plastic nonstick surface, sometimes that's called, you know, a Teflon anodized coating or Ceflon or Keflon or other names I've probably forgotten. But if you use nonstick cookware, every time you use it, whether it's an egg or a grilled cheese sandwich, you're getting some of that fluoride residue, and fluoride definitely suppresses the thyroid every single time. And so the thyroid has got to have some iodine to be able to work properly. And so what if all these other things that I've mentioned don't even play out as being relevant with you? That's possible. What if you just need a little bit of iodine? Well, one of the greatest superfoods of all time, I sort of talked about it, I just didn't flesh the topic out, is the use of kelp or sea moss. So if you were to take kelp and all of a sudden your thyroid began to improve, I'd say, bravo, good play, way to go. Now, the other thing that I would think of, the thyroid is literally the largest gland that you have in your body currently that produces hormones. Unless somebody does a surgery on you to install other glands that are larger. I'm just making that up. That didn't exist. But your thyroid, it seems to respond to walking and exercise. It doesn't have to be hard. Because anytime the thyroid's got a glitch in it, the more that you move, you increase the volume of blood flow and oxygen nutrient delivery to the thyroid by speeding up the blood flow. I mean, that probably makes sense that if you said, you know what, today's kind of a cloudy day, I'm going to go to the mall in Tyler and I'm just going to walk for 45 minutes from one end to the other. Who knows, you could make 20 laps for all I know. I really don't know, but maybe it'd be less than that. But that would definitely speed the rate of blood flow, and that would probably benefit the thyroid.
Okay. Yeah, I do walk every day, about 3.5 miles, so, I do do that. So a question I have, as I've been told, is that once I got on this T3, I'd never be able to stop taking it. Now, if that's a true statement, or if I did, you know, take the kelp and sea moss and my level started coming back up, can you get off of
absolutely.
T3? Okay.
Well, and, you know, I'm not trying to be difficult by asking this question, but did they ever say to you, you know, we need to spend some time and energy trying to figure out why your thyroid's out of whack?
No.
It was just, we have noticed that your thyroid is underactive, and this is our solution. Is that correct?
Yeah, they gave me some time. I was taking some different supplements. It was over like a 6-month period to see if it possibly would come up, but it didn't. And then they put me on the T3. So.
Has there been any family members, whether it's male or female? I'm thinking female though. That have had Hashimoto's or Graves' disease, those are autoimmune thyroid disorders.
No, not on my side of the family, no.
Does anybody have anything like psoriasis or eczema, fibromyalgia, vitiligo?
No. I come from a big family. My parents had 11 kids, so there's a lot of examples, but nobody.
Well, when you get off
it.
The phone with me, start looking at all 4,000 pictures of your relatives. That's a big family. Oh, how fabulous. Well, the thyroid, in my opinion, is the easiest tissue to poison the body. And mm-hmm. so that's always my first gut instinct. And so I know what I'm saying may not make logical sense, but we're living in a world that you're constantly exposed to toxins. Would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely.
You just can't see them. I mean, where was I the other day? Oh, I was in Tyler. But this guy was going through a parking lot, and he was spraying Roundup everywhere. If there was a concrete seam between the concrete, if there was a parking, you know, speed bump or whatever, he was spraying Roundup everywhere. And I thought to myself, there is no telling how much the wind blows that right back on him, and he breathes it in. It comes in contact with the skin. But, you know, the skin, what you got to be careful what you put on it. If you put pure olive oil on your skin is going to, quote, drink that up. If you put olive oil, I mean, if you put coconut oil, it'll drink it. If you put butter on it, it'll drink it. Honey, same thing. But I don't worry about those things. What I'd be concerned about is if you came in contact with a chemical like Roundup, for example, because your skin will drink it up. But that stuff is so, so hard on all the glandular system of the body. It's just brutal. And mm-hmm. so now I'm not trying to be difficult, but let me say it this way. I'm gonna reword this because it just kind of popped in my head. There is a gene marker that has been discovered not that long ago called the FOX03 gene. I call it the FOX03 gene. I'm sorry, I find some things comical. Nobody else even finds funny, but the FOX03 gene. That's been shown when that is more active or it's more optimal. That's the way I want to present it to you. We tend to have the fewest thyroid problems and we have the greatest longevity. And so the FOX03 gene, and actually let me start over here. Would you agree with me that when we're young, all our enzyme systems are working pretty well and we're bulletproof, we can fall off the couch, we can play hard. But when you get to be, you know, 40 years old, those genes, they don't work as efficiently as they used to. And so there's a drop-off in healing and repair. But one of the things that has been shown to absolutely increase and improve the activity of that FOX03 gene is the use of a sauna. Now, I know that there's basically three types of saunas. You got a dry sauna, where they just pump out super hot amounts of air, and those are probably awesome. I have never been to one of those, but quite often they have to have volcanic rocks in there where somebody pours water over them to keep from drying you out. But they can get really hot. I'm talking 160 to 210. Of course, if it was 210 right now in this radio station, I think my skin would be peeling off at that temperature. Then they have the steam saunas, and that would be like you're walking into a cloud embankment. And in your situation, you would go into a gym on the men's side of the gym, and you'd walk into a sauna, and you'd sit down, and you'd reach out and feel a very large, hairy man next to you in the in the cloud embankment. Actually, that might be kind of scary, huh? The other type of sauna is called an infrared sauna. These, to me, are extremely beneficial for a number of reasons. Number one, all they're doing is they're trying to imitate that wavelength of light that comes from God's creation, which is the sun. But it's an infrared spectrum. But what it does differently than what the dry one does or the steam one does, it seems to penetrate, its energy penetrates the skin, which technically, if you were standing in front of me right now, I would look at you straight on and say, oh, I can see where your thyroid's located. It's just exactly an eighth of an inch or 3/16ths of an inch under your skin. It's there it is right there. So the infrared sauna can actually penetrate that. But some of the latest studies show that the use of an infrared sauna or a far infrared sauna greatly improves the thyroid. And one of the things, what would you guess is one of the things that happens when you sit in a sauna and all this sweat starts rolling out of you and pouring out of your body?
Well, you extract the chemicals that
Bingo, you've got it. And so I was reading a study, this might have been a year ago. They said, okay, what is the best way to rid the body of toxic heavy metals? And which it's really a legitimate question because there's toxic metals everywhere. But they were showing the use of a far infrared sauna was almost superior to anything else you could think of, including chelation treatments for extracting mercury. I mean, you get an infrared sauna and you're sweating big time. I mean, it's rolling off of your face, dripping onto your towel. That's mercury coming out of you.
Mm-hmm.
As well as those the chemical residues. And And that's one of the reasons why if somebody used a far infrared sauna to try to heal their thyroid, you would definitely want to wash that stuff off afterwards. I do not recommend crawling into bed and rolling around the sheets. There's just no telling how much toxic residue. Or if your chihuahua is in the sauna with you, I would not allow the dog to roll around the sheets.
Well, you made a couple good points, Leon, when you mentioned that strawberry rash. I've always had a kind of a faint rash, and it was explained to me it was probably a birthmark, right? But
well, and
it's more brilliant.
You mean it's more brilliant now than what it used to be?
No, if I get out and I exercise, and that it turns a lot redder, and then I'm starting to get age spots, I guess they call them.
Yeah.
And I don't know if
everybody gets those. Well, and I would say there's an opportunity to help assist between your liver and your kidneys and your skin and your gut and your lungs and tissues. I think detoxification is in order.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the old school treatments, have you ever seen those old National Geographics where they show people from Poland and Russia and all parts of Europe? They take a tourist trip to Israel. And one of their top places they want to go is to the Dead Sea. And when they go to the Dead Sea, they want to rub those mineral-rich muds and soils all over their body. And I'm thinking that would be quite the attractive look for you today to rub mud all over your body. What do you think? Do you agree with me? Maybe.
Yeah.
But the idea of getting in, that's why when you go to the health store, they sell very large buckets for about 15 to maybe 20 bucks of these Dead Sea minerals. And one of the minerals is called magnesium chloride. And so there, if you took a bath, I'm sorry, if you fill the bathtub and put these minerals in there, they will start drawing toxins out of your skin. So whatever you're dealing with on the inside is going to come up on the surface of the skin. Does that make sense?
It does, yes.
So these are some things you can look at. Probably one of the substances that I've used a lot of, it's a thyroid protomorphogen, and I'm not trying to make you feel sick in your stomach when I tell you what it's made of, but when they take a young calf, meaning a cow, to the harvesting facility or processing center, they will remove the thyroid and they will try to liquefy the nuclear contents thereof. And those are called protomorphogen glandulars. And so you could actually take that as a supplement. And what that does is it tends to target the improvement of your thyroid. And there's several mechanisms. I would say for the most part, we're dealing with more autoimmune thyroid problems and toxic thyroids now than what we were 50 years ago. And so this is where when I examine a man's thyroid and I find it's not functioning up to speed, I start asking myself the question, is there anything that's interfering with healing? Does he have any obstructions? But the number one food that I find over and over again that's completely counterproductive to thyroid health would be modern, genetically modified and hybridized wheat sprayed with Roundup. And which sometimes it's legitimate. Even though a person may react to wheat, the real problem is all the Roundup residue that's in the wheat. There's a man right now that's probably listening, and he called me on the phone about, can I say six Saturdays ago? I'm just guessing. He said he just saw on these groups that grow wheat, how or these farmers that are growing wheat, what they do is it's their common practice to spray Roundup all over their wheat 10 days before harvest. And you're going, well, why would they do that? Well, one of the reasons they would do that is because when you kill all the weeds and the residue that's around the wheat, you get more wheat per bushel, which means they get more money, I guess. I'm not a wheat farmer. I think it's beautiful to drive through it's beautiful to look at. But I would say wheat would be number one for me if I could find one food over and over again that's been shown to interfere. So if you use plastic cookware of any kind, like a plastic spatula, ditch it and get one that's stainless steel.
Okay.
If you have like a nonstick cooking utensil, use it for target practice. I mean, you got your wife a new shotgun for Christmas, throw it up in the air and let her blast away. Or maybe
all right,
not.
Yeah, I'm going to try the kelp and the sea moss and the
There you go.
Thyroid liquefied, and keep my exercise up. And
yeah, you're doing great in that department.
If I can find a sauna, infrared sauna somewhere, try that as well.
Well, be sure and well wear a blindfold into it, and don't feel around with your hands, okay?
Okay.
I'm joking. Well, thank you so much for your phone call. I hope I helped you.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so
okay.
much.
Okay, have a good day,
buddy.
Have
a blessed day.
Oh, you too. Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Bye, man.
Okay, there's time for one more phone call. The number's 903-586-5257 if you'd like to join me on the air. Whatever questions you have, it's fine. It's so fun to think about how you can improve your health, because this is your ticket to not only... think of it this way. If you can maintain your level of health and your physical strength, that's a whole lot better than being really sick and spending all your money on disease, isn't it? Yes. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Just when you thought it was safe.
Wait a second. Did you know this is a program about health, sir?
I thought it was just a popularity contest.
Well, then I would lose.
Hey,
how are you?
I'm good. Hey, I just had somebody text me and ask me a question to ask you.
Okay.
Do you know, is melatonin known to cause nightmares?
There are some people, when they take the synthetic version, which is, I'm assuming it's what it is, that yes, if they overdo it, they can have like a bad, uncomfortable dream.
Okay.
But then again, you know, to me, I find this so intriguing, because if a person tells me, they say, hey, Dr. Morgan, I never, ever dream. And then if they take a little bit of melatonin, they'll say, all of a sudden, I'm having dreams. And I'll say, well, are they good? And they say, yeah. But if we had 10 people in a room, there's probably going to be one person that has bad dreams as a result, and the rest of them are good dreams.
Well, this is the one up north. Just woke up and told me that he had a bad nightmare. And he said, ask Dr. Morgan, please.
Yeah, absolutely.
Could be a cause of nightmares.
Well, you know what my first instinct says? Change forms of melatonin and see if there's the dreams go away.
Okay. So he's probably getting a synthetic version as opposed to a natural version.
Well, I think they're all synthetic versions. I'm sorry to say it that
okay.
way. I kind of posed that idea, but that's probably not accurate on my part. Sorry about that. Okay. I was a little bit deceptive.
I didn't realize that was a synthetic.
Okay. Yes, sir. I'm pretty sure.
Hey, all right. Well, see if he can change.
See, I know.
The site.
That's right. There you go.
Is there something else to take for sleep that would help?
Well, you know, one thing that he could take, there's an herb called passion flower, and actually they kind of grow all around here. They've got vines and beautiful kind of a purplish flower.
Mm-hmm.
But he could try just loading up on that. And one experiment that I might try in his case, since he's far removed from East Texas, I can get away with this.
Sure.
Okay, good. Then in that case, we'll use him as a guinea pig, and I'll recommend about 6 capsules of just passion flower. And that stuff's cheap.
Oh, okay.
Very inexpensive. A bottle of it may cost you $5.50. But I may try about 6 capsules about 30 minutes before bedtime, or at bedtime if he forgets the 30 minute. And we could try that and see if that leads to a big, big result.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's super. I will let him know that. And hey, thank you for that office visit yesterday. Dad's very pleased. Last night he was like, where's my lemonade?
what a good boy. That's good.
I have it for you in the morning, Dad.
Well, you know, if he rings the little bell besides the bed, you've got to come running with lemonade. That's all there is to it.
It's really been nice talking to you.
Okay, thanks. have a good weekend.
I didn't think I was supposed to be a bellboy.
Well, you just found out. See you later.
Have a great one. Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye. Well, the nice thing about those little bells is the batteries don't ever wear out, and you don't have to worry about losing the cell phone signal. So the little bell's, you know, pretty accurate. All right, you're listening to Health Essentials. We are completely out of time. I've enjoyed the time with you, Lord willing. By His good grace and mercy, I will be back this time next week on Health Essentials.